Welcome to Pets Tell the Truth. This program is dedicated to understanding our animal companions on a deeper level. I'm Dr. Agnes Thomas, psychologist and animal telepathic communicator. I'll be your host as we listen to what our animal friends are saying and as we appreciate the way they view the world, their missions, and their spirituality. Today's show is brought to you by Garnett Publishing in Cleveland, Ohio. Garnett is calling for finished manuscripts, so if you have a manuscript that's dear to your heart, that is finished, and you would like to share and see it in print, contact them at www.garnettpublishing.com or telephone them directly at 216-458-6100. They are the people who publish my book, Pets Tell the Truth, A Mystical Journey into the Animal Mind, which is available in bookstores everywhere. Tonight we're going to be discussing the healing power of animals, from Egypt to hometown USA. We have an expert on animal-assisted therapy, Dr. Janice Hammer, who will be joining us shortly. You're probably wondering, how can animals heal humans? Let me tell you a little bit about the ancient times. In the times of the ancient Egyptians, stories of priestesses and their familiars, that is, that's what they called animals that assisted the priestess in the healing process, were legendary. The priestess believed that thoughts, attitudes, and ignorance of spirit were the root cause of the afflictions of the human body. According to folklore, the priestess would first listen to the patient's physical complaints and ask an animal assistant, usually a cat that possessed empathic abilities, to assist in the healing through a deep act of compassion. And by taking upon itself the spiritual cause of the illness, thus freeing it from the patient. The animal spirit was believed to be capable of leaving its body and engage in trans-dimensional travel. And as such, it was able to cast off the illness, which its body now carried, by raising the vibratory energy of the illness to a higher spiritual level in which the lower vibration of the illness was incompatible, causing it to cease. The cat then became restored to its original health, and it would return to its physical body. The patient, who was now cured, was then directed to say prayers of thanksgiving for its restored health. Animal-assisted healing still exists today. And here to tell us how it is done is Dr. Janice Hammer. Dr. Hammer is a veterinarian who graduated from the University of Delaware with a degree in animal science and the University of Pennsylvania College of Veterinary Medicine in Doylestown, Pennsylvania. Dr. Hammer has been in private practice and for the last 9 years has been teaching and doing research at Delaware Valley College. She has developed and consulted for many animal-assisted therapy programs, and has recently developed an online certification program in animal-assisted therapy for the Animal Behavior Institute. She is a much-sought-after speaker for many organizations on the healing power of pets through animal-assisted therapy. Welcome to the show, Jan.
Thank you, Agnes. Thank you for having me.
It's very nice to have you here. I'm very excited about this, and I'm dying to find out how this works today. So can you tell us, what is animal-assisted therapy?
Well, first, most people think of animal-assisted therapy, you often hear the term pet therapy.
Uh-huh.
And that is really kind of a misnomer. The accepted terminology today is animal-assisted therapy or animal-facilitated therapy. And animal-assisted therapy, in a nutshell, is when we incorporate animals into the therapeutic setting for people. Animal-assisted therapy is goal-oriented, and it is documented, but it's a way of incorporating animals into the therapy for people to make them feel better in many different ways. There are also there's also another area called animal-assisted activities that most people associate with animal-assisted therapy, where people take their pets into visit people, such as in nursing homes, just to make them feel better. But the actual term animal-assisted therapy is a goal-oriented, documented approach where we are looking to improve the health of people, and in doing so, incorporate animals and to help motivate them and energize them to get better.
How does this actually work physiologically? I'm a physiological psychologist, and I like hooking people and animals up to wires to find out physiologic changes. Does it actually change their blood pressure and stuff?
Absolutely. There have been a number of studies, really starting back in the 80s with Aaron Katcher and Beck, who did studies showing that even just the simple act of watching a fish tank in a dentist office decreased the blood pressure of people that were waiting to see the dentist. There have also been a number of studies since then that have shown not only decrease in blood pressure, but decrease in the stress hormones, as well as other physiological parameters such as just decreased levels of anger and increased activity, so increased exercise, that sort of thing. There's a very interesting study that I wanted to bring to your attention because I think you might find it very interesting. It was published in 2005 in the Veterinary Journal by O'Dendel, and he looked at adults and dogs together. And what he did was take one adult and one dog and had them interact in a positive manner for a short period of time. And they looked at blood pressure, stress hormones, and the bonding hormones in both the people and the dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And in both the people and the dogs, blood pressure decreased. The bonding hormones, such as prolactin and oxytocin, increased, indicating a bonding experience. And cortisol levels decrease. So I thought that was interesting, that not only does it benefit humans, but in the positive setting, it also benefited the animals.
It affects the animals. Are you familiar with Valerie Hunt's work on the energy field, the human energy field?
No, I am not familiar with that.
Okay. Oh, look, well, according to Valerie, we have auras around our bodies, and she calls it the human energy field, and you can actually record from it. With tiny electrodes. So before the electrode even goes in the body, you can be about an inch or two away, and you can record from that field. And you can pick up a signal from the body, which is what she calls the, she measures actually the vibrational changes of people's auras and so on. And she has a term she uses called a field transaction. In other words, say my aura is a foot away, all the way, it surrounds me by a foot. And the animal has an aura, which I've taken photographs of, and it surrounds them by actually more than a foot. And when you enter somebody else's field, energy field, you're actually having a transaction with that field. It's kind of difficult to understand, but it's like my spirit, which is the aura, and the animal spirit, which is their aura, actually communicate on a higher spiritual level even before we start to interact. This is what you're saying, is that some of these hormones, this is really actually taking place and it can be measured. There is a measurable effect. I love this.
Oh, yes, absolutely. They have, like I said, they looked at, and like I said, both in humans and in the dogs, where they showed an increase in the bonding hormones, such as oxytocin and prolactin. And then the decrease in the, particularly in humans, they saw a decrease in cortisol, which indicates a decrease in stress. But again, like I said, in both we saw a decrease in blood pressure, which generally goes along with decreased stress.
Yes, that's interesting. Can you give us an example of how this is used in a therapeutic setting? Supposing my mother is in the hospital, and you're bringing an animal into the hospital to visit the patients. What do you actually do? I mean, how does this go about?
Sure. In when we're talking about animal-assisted activities, or we use the term AAA, mm-hmm. The simple act of bringing an animal into the setting, let's say we have a woman in a nursing home or in the hospital, and just allowing them to stroke and pet the animal has shown to cause a calming effect and also decrease blood pressure. So just the simple act of stroking with no goal-oriented, you know, no specific goal in mind still has a calming effect.
Have you ever done this with people with brain damage?
Personally, I have not, but I do know people that have, and certainly it even with people with Alzheimer's and dementia, it has a very calming effect. They see much less agitation and much less aggression in patients with Alzheimer's that have participated in animal-assisted activities and therapy.
I saw this done once at the hospital that I worked at here in Cleveland, and it was a patient of mine that was brain damaged. And it was very interesting because when this happened to be, it looked like a border collie. And when she started to become interested in this animal, it kind of restored her life. And she started to think of herself as a whole person again, because I guess an animal's attitude towards you or a relationship with an animal is probably the only uncensored relationship that you'll ever have in your life. Somebody's always telling you to do this, that, or the next thing. But even for children, there's something about the animal that a person can feel like themselves. And I actually saw this lady get restored and start to think of herself as a whole person again, and how she might go on with her life after her injuries, and was able to accept her injuries and think of alternate sort of behaviors for herself where she could go on even despite her debilitation.
Well, there's one nice thing about animals, too, is that they're non-judgmental. They accept people completely as they are. So it doesn't matter how you look. It doesn't matter, you know, if you have a disability. That it makes absolutely no difference to an animal, obviously. They don't. It's not something that's important to them. So they are truly accepting for the person as they are, which you don't often see in people-to-people relationships.
What kind of animals are usually used for this?
Well, primarily, the most common species are dogs.
Okay.
However, and partly because they are easily trained, you know, they've been domesticated for so long, they're very, very social in most instances. And so they're the primary breed that is, or I should say species that is used. But cats can be used, birds, other small mammals, rabbits, rodents, really just about any animal can be incorporated into this setting, just because of their, most people are interested.
Mm-hmm. And I think they have natural attachments for more familiar species.
Yes, although sometimes it's just the new interest. I once worked with a woman who had a pet rat that we took visiting with us when we went to visit a nursing home. And it was interesting to note that at first many of the people were, oh, no, a rat, get it away from me. But then over time, but they didn't leave, you know, because they were very attracted to the animal. And then over time, they got used to the rat and were actually willing to hold the rat.
Yeah, I love rats. I work with rats in the laboratory, and I became very, very fond of rats. They became my little pets and friends, and they're interesting creatures. Their physiology, as you know, is very similar to humans, their biochemistry, which is why they're used in research. But also, they're friendly little creatures, and they're very smart.
Oh, yes, they are.
Oh, my. They learn very fast. That's why they're used for learning experiments, because my patients are all brain damaged. So I used to work on programs trying to rehabilitate people that had brain damage. And so that's why I used the rats, to see what it would take to get them to relearn or something. How do you train an animal to be a therapy dog?
Well, a lot of training is just basic obedience, and that's one of the things that we do at the Animal Behavior Institute, is provide online classes for or how to train animals. There are basic ideas of positive reinforcement training that you can use for basic obedience, and like I said, that's one of the most important things in having an animal be involved in animal-assisted therapy. And you say, well, how can you train a cat or a rabbit or whatever?
Not easily.
But they do respond to positive reinforcement techniques, and they can be trained, and literally almost as easily as a dog, to sit, you know, or sit on a lap or be still or be comfortable around unusual settings, so that different species can be trained. But certainly for dogs, we stress basic obedience. As well as just getting them used to all sorts of environments and all sorts of people. You need an animal that enjoys socializing. In other words, that enjoys all people, and sometimes I say they're bomb-proof. Nothing fazes them.
No, they're really awesome. I don't know if you've read my book or not, but I communicate with a lot of animals, and because I'm in the medical profession, many people come to me whose animals have medical issues. But I've had many animals that I've talked to, and I ask what their mission is, and they tell me that their mission is to heal their person. And then I find out that their person, who's the actual client on the other end of the phone, has back problems or whatever, and they have a way of going. I ask them how they do this, and they have a way of going right to that part of their energy field that's hurting. So for me, example, my cats always go right to my back because that's what hurts. And I've never seen any evidence of it, but it seems that they must be doing something with the energy field to make it better. There are people that work with this kind of thing. Barbara Brennan is one.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow cats know how to do this. Dogs, too, because many animals tell me, cats, dogs, and other animals tell me that their mission in life is to heal their person.
Well, there have been a number of cases where dogs have pointed to or been close to their human and pointed out a malignancy. That has been documented a number of times, and they've even taken as far as there were two different studies published last year on training dogs to be able to detect certain types of cancers.
Yes. Now, my friend and I were talking about that this morning, and I told her that you were going to be on the show, and she was very anxious to hear what you had to say. I was very interested in that. Do they pick up a scent? Do they pick up an energy? Is there anything, you know, any research, any data that's available to figure out how they do this? Because that's quite an amazing thing.
The way the two studies that were published late last year, and I apologize, I don't remember the authors, but in both of them, they were basing the training to see if they could train the animals. For instance, in one case, it was a urine sample.
Mm-hmm.
They thought it was working on the idea that it was the odor,
mm-hmm.
that there was a different odor given off by the urine sample of the person that had the particular cancer.
Mm-hmm. Did they find any results for that?
Yes, they were actually positive. It was a very small study. I believe they only used 8 dogs, but they were able to train 6 of the 8 dogs, if I remember correctly, to be able to properly detect with, I want to say, boy, don't quote me on this, but something like 90% accuracy.
That's interesting. You know, because I have 7 cats myself, and I love cats, but I've noticed also in dogs that when one of my cats is ill, the other cats will smell them and smell their butt, and they will hiss at them, and they will stay away from them. And, of course, cats are territorial animals. But what they'll do is the animal that's sick, even though they've lived in the same house together, you know, since they've been born, they'll try to get it out of the pack because they tell me that they're afraid that predators will find that animal because it's sick and it's weak, and it will draw the predator to their pack. It's really interesting to note. So they are picking up some sort of scent that indicates illness, at least in another animal. So I don't see why they wouldn't work with humans.
Sure. I would agree with you. There's obviously something that's different with that their senses are much more attuned to that make them able to do this.
Yeah, my friend Becky Ferris is also a animal communicator, and her dogs, she has many dogs, and her dogs are trained for disasters. And, for example, at the Oklahoma City bombing, during the Oklahoma bombing, her dogs went there and sniffed around in the ashes and the rubble to find humans that were buried alive or possibly dying. They did the same thing at the World Trade Center. So there
yes.
must be some cue that they're getting to identify. I don't know how that's done. Do you have any idea about that?
Well, it is amazing what they can do, and it is scent-based. the working dogs, as I call them,
Yes. They
are trained. I mean, they can be trained to follow scent on the ground. They can follow scent over air. They can even follow scent over water. It's just incredible. They can be trained to detect live people. They can also be what they call cadaver dogs to be able to detect dead. Because it's literally within minutes after you die, the body composition changes and can be detected by an animal.
Yes, you decompose very
fast. We have a caller online. Would you like to me to put him on?
Would you like to take a caller, Jan?
I'll leave that up to you, Agnes, whatever you'd like to do.
Okay, let's take a call.
Okay, I'll put him on air.
Okay.
Okay, stay with
me. Hello? Hello?
Dr. Agnes?
Yes?
This is Sydney calling.
Yes, Sydney.
I would like to respond to your caller right now.
Yes.
First of all, let me tell you, I am in awe of listening to you, as you know.
Oh, thank you very much.
I'm assuming that your caller was referring to feral cats on the outside rejecting a sick cat for survival purposes.
No, these are domestic cats. These are my own cats.
I have
that live in
had three cats in the last several months who have died in my home who have been embraced and protected by my other ferals.
Mm-hmm.
As they were dying.
Yes, that is
not rejected and pushed out of the pack, but loved.
Yes, what they do is they comfort the animal. The animal knows they're going to die. They do comfort the animal, and they stay with them until they pass. Absolutely, and the animal's spirit will stay around the house usually about 2 weeks, and until the other animals know that they're still alive but in another dimension. Yes, absolutely.
Because your caller said that they are pushed out of the pack.
I said that they're in packs, yes. But they do tend to do that if it's at first, if the animal is sick.
I said I think it also depends on the circumstances also, because I have actually seen it happen both ways.
Okay.
Yes, I've seen it both ways too.
So I believe it is often based on the circumstances and the pack of animals, that sort of thing.
Yes.
Okay,
because I
know that mine comforted
the
dying ones during their process.
Yes.
And they've actually seen, you know, elephants. Elephants tend to be the type of animals that will congregate around an ill animal or give signs of, you know, if
of
animals
course.
Can mourn, give signs of mourning.
Yes, they do, and they grieve.
Yes.
Okay, well, I just wanted to respond to that because I felt opposite.
Thank you for calling.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you for everything. You're the most beautiful person I've ever known.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
How lovely.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, that is true that animals will do that, and many people will call me and tell me that one of their animals passed away and that the remaining dog or remaining cats will just be grieving so, and they are, but they can see spirit, and I'll ask them to show me, and because I can't see them, but they can show me what they see, and usually there is an angel. Now, I've never seen angels, but this is what the animal shows me in picture form as I pick up their telepathic communication. There's an angel with them. And the dog or the cat that has departed will come back and tell the other animals what has happened, that they've passed on but they're still alive, and usually they reincarnate and come back. But, yes, animals grieve the same as we do, and they care very, very much for their other animal companions. They'll do it for their master, too.
Sure, and I have also seen, for instance, there is a nursing home facility where I have been on a number of occasions, and they have some cats that live on the floors.
Yes.
And on one floor they have a particular cat that the nurses say that they worry when the cat goes in to stay with one patient, because what happens is they say for about 2 weeks the cat will focus in on this particular patient before they die.
Yes.
And literally sit with that patient for a couple of weeks, and so when they see a cat focus in on one of their clients, they get very concerned because, at least historically, it's sort of been an indication that the client is not doing well.
Yeah, cats are very interesting creatures. They can astral project. They can leave their bodies, which is probably why they sleep so long. They sleep about 20 hours a day.
Yes.
But they're amazing creatures. They're very highly evolved spiritually. They're not afraid of anything. They're very independent. And they can go other places and visit people where they are. For example, when I had my last neck surgery, I told my cats that I was going to the hospital and so on, and they said, is it the place where you don't come back? And they knew, you know, that some of the cats had passed away, and they went to the vet, and they never came back. And I said, no. And they said, can we go with you? And I would say, no, you can't come with me because it's a hospital for people. And a couple of them said to me, we can fly there and be in your bed. And they really meant that. I mean, what they're saying is they can actually, you know, come out of their body, astral project, and go and be in the hospital with me. And I don't know if it was a dream or if it was my imagination, but after the surgery, I felt an animal, one of my cats, I could feel the vibration of them purring, but they were actually on my bed. And, you know, I couldn't see them, but somehow I knew that their presence was there.
Mm-hmm.
Does it make sense to you?
Mm-hmm. No, certainly, and I understand. I mean, just even having a pet nearby or being able to stroke an animal under stress, such as in a hospital setting when you're so away from your natural environment, can be just so calming that, again, it helps improve the healing process. And that's why I think animal-assisted therapy, animal-assisted activities are growing so much, because we are starting to see, originally just anecdotally, but now with some research that's coming out, that it does have a positive effect with decreasing medications that are needed and improving recovery, that sort of thing. Although it was even noticed by, there's a quote from Florence Nightingale, or that was at least attributed to Florence Nightingale, about saying that even a small pet animal has a positive impact on the ill. And so that, you know,
wouldn't, because we're animals too. We're members of the animal kingdom. Why wouldn't we want, I can't imagine not wanting an animal around me, just for comfort and understanding.
Mm-hmm.
Animals are just so awesome.
Well, there is the biophilia hypothesis, which says that people just have an innate attraction to not only animals but nature in general, and that even we've been separated from nature for a relatively short time that we've been on this earth, and that we still have genetically ingrained in us this interest, not necessarily positive interest, but an interest that when we see animals, we are naturally attracted to them, as well as just nature in general.
Yes, we're kin with everything on the earth. There's something very normal about loving animals, and children pick it up at early ages, even if they're allergic. There's something very normal about bonding with animals.
Yes.
It's almost hard not to. Of course, I'm a sucker, and, you know, any animal I see just steals my heart. But, you know, Jan, when I talk to animals, and, of course, I connect with them through their hearts to talk to them, you know, you can't help but fall in love with them. They're so wonderful. And some of the things that they'll do to help their persons is amazing, amazing, that they will take on that kind of a responsibility. Even people that are emotionally ill, they will support them, and they will be with them to sort of be a balance for them, to kind of steady them,
mm-hmm.
so they don't have so many ups and downs.
Right.
It's mm-hmm. miraculous. It's amazing.
And it's also amazing just the motivation that animals provide. They're often used in the physical therapy setting where you might have difficulty, let's say someone who maybe just had a hip replaced and they're supposed mm-hmm. to get up and walk. And, you know, you can tell them, go ahead and walk to the other side of the room and back. Well, that's not much motivation. But yet if there's a dog, when you say, well, why don't you walk over and pet John's dog across the room. They're much more motivated because they're attracted to the animal, and they're focusing on the animal as opposed to the walking.
Or them making a mistake.
Right, exactly. And that's one of the things we try to do within our courses is to show how and many, many different ways that animals can be incorporated into the therapeutic setting as well as the educational setting. And if I just might add here, our institute, which can be found at animaledu.com, we have courses not only in animal training but in animal-assisted therapy.
You have courses in animal training as well?
Yes. Yes, we provide, we have an online course on animal training and also an online course on animal behavior. We also have an online course on animal minds and emotions, as well as the human-animal bond. Like I said, and all of the information can be found on our website, which is at animaledu.com.
Hmm. So if I wanted to find out, see, I've never raised a dog, so I don't know how to do it. So if I wanted to learn how to potty train my dog, my new dog that I'm going to take a chance on, can I just go online and do it, or is it a course you sign up for, or how do you do it?
Well, it is a course you sign up for. We run semesters, and each semester is 11 weeks long, and each semester consists of 10 modules, which last for 1 week, and then there's a week for a final. So it is like taking a course, a live course, except that it's online. There's a reading assignment. There's a study guide. There's a quiz that can be taken as many times as necessary to learn the material. We also have a visual flow map, so for the visual learners. And this allows you to learn the concept, for instance, in the animal training class, the basic concepts of operant conditioning and, you know, positive reinforcement
yes.
conditioning to get your animal to work with you and guiding them in a positive way to do what you would like them to do. But the classes we run three semesters a year. The next one starts September 7th. We run, and that runs through into November. Then we have another semester from January to March, and then our spring semester, which started just a few weeks ago from April through June.
Hmm. So this is like taking a college course.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
And
it is.
You put the information online, and can you go at your own pace, or do you try to keep up with the pace of the course?
You try to keep up with the pace of the course. However, the course needs to be finished within that 11-week time frame,
mm-hmm.
and each week there's a discussion associated with each module, so it's important to participate in the weekly discussions. But as far as reading the materials or taking the quiz or whatever, you can do that within the time frame of the module of that week. So if you work or you're just a night owl and prefer to do things, you know, at 2 in the morning,
mm-hmm.
you can do that, whatever fits your schedule.
Yeah, and some people just function better in the morning, and so maybe
sure.
they would want to take the exam in the morning.
Sure, and there are very few classes of this nature number one, there's not that many live classes, but there's very, very few classes that are offered online. And we wanted to open it up to those people that couldn't get to or didn't have the opportunity to actually go to a live classroom and would find it easier to take them online.
You get certification, don't you?
Yes, we provide two certificates. If you take certain classes, there's five classes for each certificate, and that gives you a certificate in either animal-assisted therapy or animal behavior and enrichment.
I've talked to animals that when I ask them their mission, a lot of times the client will ask what's his mission, and a lot of animals say they want to be therapy animals. And also, they have the personality. They have this wonderful kind of mothering nature about them. And I say, gee, this would be wonderful because he's the perfect type. But yet, I never know where to send them. But this is wonderful information.
Well, this will certainly help those people that are looking to learn more about the animal-assisted therapy and what's involved. And certainly, not every pet is meant to be in animal-assisted therapy.
No.
You know, some pets are just wonderful pets at home, but just don't do well outside of their own family, so to speak.
Right, and just like not all dogs want to be show dogs.
Right, exactly, exactly.
Right, and not all dogs want to be mothers.
Exactly. But again, as you have said, most dogs do best, or most animals do best, when they have a job to do.
Oh, yeah.
And certainly this is one job that they can do and thrive at if they have the temperament for it.
Well, it's amazing what the universe will go to the extent they'll go to bring love and healing to not only people but animals. There's so much love out there, and to see it being used in this way, it's awesome.
It never ceases to amaze me, the results that you get. I mean, I have seen, even in my own practice with working with animal-assisted therapy, where, you know, one gentleman who hadn't spoken, they said he hadn't spoken more than a few words in over a year, I went in with my dog, and not only did he smile, but he talked to me about his dog. And I didn't realize that till I left the room, and the nurse looked at me and said, "I can't believe you actually got him to say sentences." And it was nothing I did. It was the fact that he was interacting with my dog.
Yes, it was the common bond of the animal.
Yes.
I talk to my animals. Of course, I can hear them. But I talk to them all the time, and I tell them things about myself that I've never told anyone.
Mm-hmm.
And they tell me things about themselves and their missions and their relationships with the other animals and the animals outside, the wild animals, because I live in a wildlife sanctuary. It's amazing.
It's interesting
totally
that you say that you talk to your pets, because there was a recent survey done by the Pet Food Manufacturing Association,
mm-hmm.
and in their survey, literally 100% of the people said that they talk to their pets.
Yes, and you know, their pets understand them.
Mm.
It's just that animals think we're deaf because, you know, we don't hear them, but it's really very easy to learn this. I was not born with this skill. I learned this. And there are many people around the country who actually teach it now. I teach it, but many people who teach this. And it's simple to learn. I have a CD that tells you how to do it. They can get from my website. Incidentally, talking about my website, I would like to bring up that I have a newsletter now that you can sign up for. It's free. If you go to my website, www.petstellthetruth.com, and if you scroll down the face page, the home page, at the bottom, you can subscribe to it for free, and it gives tips on how to take care of your animal. It gives you the announcements of people that are going to be on the show talking about animals and the subject matter, and it's absolutely free. So if you want to, if listeners want to tune into that, they certainly can. I need to take a break here for a minute, Jan.
Okay.
I want to remind listeners to be sure and listen to BBS Radio on Thursday evening at 7 p.m., and the show is called Metaphysical Straight Talk from the Heart, and the host is my friend Tara Hatton. She is a gifted psychic who can tune into your heart's mission in this life. Tara is associated with the Edgar Cayce Association for Research and Enlightenment in Virginia Beach, and she is a much sought-after speaker on spirituality and metaphysics, and she's an all-round good person. Her show is always enlightening, always fun, and she's quite knowledgeable on metaphysics. Okay, Jan.
Yes.
Tell me how you got interested in this.
Well, it's interesting. More than 10 years ago, I had been taking care of my elderly parents, and they both passed away, and I had some free time. And at that point, I said, you know, I want to do something for others, but I'd also like to do it with my pet.
Uh-huh.
So I'm living in the Philadelphia area, and there was a school in the area that was offering a certificate program in animal-assisted therapy. So I thought, well, that sounds interesting. So I took the course and then realized, you know, as I'm working with that and saw the effect that my dogs had on my parents in their elder years and during their illness, I said, boy, this is something I would really like to do.
Mm-hmm.
So through the course, I then became certified, and I then became certified with my dog to do animal-assisted therapy. And then I guess because of my veterinary background, I started working with some other people that were setting up programs and then started to set up a few programs on my own. And it just sort of snowballed from there, I guess. You know, when you see something work so well, it's positive reinforcement.
Yes.
and just continue to learn more about it and continue to get involved in different areas of animal-assisted therapy, because there are so many different areas. I mean, you can see it with helping the ill. You can see it with children to help them learn in school. There are just so many different ways and areas that animals can help us.
How, for example, have you? What do you mean you can help them in school? Sometimes they have guinea pigs in the classroom, like in kindergarten. Does it actually help the student to have an animal in the classroom?
Well, it really depends on how it's done. I mean, you have to. One of the reasons why I got involved in this also is because I tend to look at it from the animal's perspective, and most people in animal-assisted therapy tend to look at it from the client perspective. So you need to look at it really from both, but you want to make sure that the animal is well cared for. So you have to be careful with animals in the classroom, making sure that is done appropriately.
Mm-hmm.
However, one of the things, and you can have animals in the classroom, but you don't have to have them in the classroom per se or living in the classroom continuously to be a learning tool. One of the things that has been very big recently are the READ programs. One place to find more about this is on the Intermountain Therapy Dog Association. They have developed programs that basically what it is for children to learn how to read. They read to a therapy dog.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
And that way, you know, they're not trying to read to their peers or to the adult that's handling the animal. They're reading to the dog. And that way they're much less self-conscious about it, and it helps them improve their reading skills. And the dogs have been trained to lie still with the animals and to pay attention, and the children has been in the preliminary studies have shown that the children's reading skills have improved dramatically over standard teaching techniques.
I bet that would work for stuttering too.
I bet it would. I would expect that it would, because, you know, with the fact that, as we said before, animals are non-judgmental, so the student can read and falter over a word or whatever, and obviously the dog doesn't care. And then the handler of the dog is trained how to make sure that the situation runs smoothly and to help the student continue on. But they can also be used many other ways, even simple things like having an ant farm. Or some classrooms will buy butterfly chrysalis and have them develop within the classroom so the children can see them grow and then release them, you know, in the summer. There are other programs. Sometimes you can have an animal within the classroom, but other times another teacher I knew had a service animal. She had a puppy where she was keeping the puppy for the first year while she was doing basic training before it would go on to further training. And she got permission to bring the animal in once a week so the students in her classroom could take measurements and weight and see how the animal has grown and developed and that sort of aspect also. So there are many, many different ways that animals can be used in the education curriculum.
That's so wholesome. I really love hearing about this because there's so much junk that is presented to children today, and to hear something as wholesome as, you know, bringing an animal in and watching it grow. I'm in my 60s, and when I grew up, my grandmother had a farm with all kinds of animals. It was the most fascinating thing. I loved it. I got to see all these animals and their functions and go out and pick up the chicken eggs and watch the little peeps as they hatched under my grandmother's wood stove. It's so wonderful to see and to have animals around you.
Oh, absolutely. It's definitely motivational. And then by motivating the students, I mean, you can incorporate math and English and science skills, you know, from one simple visit of an animal or once a week to watch the growth and development. There are so many things you can do with it. And animals, like I said, are used in the traditional classroom in that respect, but oftentimes they're used with very successfully with children at risk, allowing them the opportunity to nurture something, to learn respect for life, for things that they may not have received in their home environment, and the animals really bring out the best in them.
Oh, yes. I have a student that took one of my workshops and learned how to communicate with animals, and she put together a program for people that have had strokes. And what her program was is she would bring animals in, and the people would give they were mainly dogs. The people would give the dogs baths and, you know, groom them and so
mm-hmm.
on. And it gave them a purpose for their existence. It made them feel so good about themselves that they were still useful, even though they had these handicaps, and some of them were paralyzed on one side and so on. But she developed this therapy program where people actually took care of something again. And, you know, especially for women, women love to take care of things because that's sort of in our genes. And it gave them an opportunity to sort of rethink their usefulness.
Absolutely.
And what they could do. It's wonderful.
And that's one of the reasons why I think pets are so important for the elderly, because many times their kids are, you know, are grown and off, and they need something to nurture and feel useful about.
Yes.
And which is another reason why it's animals are an important part of therapy, because it also, when I say it's motivational, it gives a purpose to the work. I mean, if you're grooming a dog, you know, not only are you increasing potentially your range of motion, but you're also grooming the dog.
Right, and you're doing something, and you're interacting with the animal.
Right.
And it's not like trying to, you know, utter sentences, complete sentences to visitors who come who only look at you like, oh, poor thing.
Right.
But, you know, pushed out of society when there's something wrong with you.
Right, and that's why the unconditional acceptance is just phenomenal.
Yes, it's amazing. There's nothing like it.
And there's another interesting thing that they have looked at with animals and the disabled is that by having a pet, it also increases sociability. They have found not only with the disabled but with normal people, they're much more likely to interact if there's an animal. And does the interaction occur with the animal present, but once the animal is gone, like, for instance, if two people have met because of a dog, but then they meet again without the dog,
mm-hmm.
they still have increased interaction. So that the idea of having an animal, whether it's a point of focus, something to talk about, something in common, it does increase our interaction with others, and in turn increases our acceptance.
Yes, I would imagine that it would, you know, you'd automatically trust that person because you bonded with them on different levels and your mutual understanding and appreciation of their animal would come into it. I know many couples that have married who have they've met riding horses and because they have that commonality between them.
Yes.
And that understanding.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I feel this, too. When I have workshops in my home and people come to learn about how to talk to animals, my animals come out, and they never do this around company, only around the students, and they sit on their laps, and they sit there and watch. They love the energy of those people that come because they know that they're sincere in their interest in animals, and they just can't get enough of it.
Although it does seem, you know, sometimes when you do have company and it's the one person that doesn't like cats that the cats always aim for.
Yeah. Well, I have one friend that's allergic to them, and they always go for her, and the poor lady leaves sneezing and so on. Do you do anything with seeing eye dogs?
No, I do not. That's specifically with service animals, and they have specialized training for the particular service that they're going to provide, whether it be guiding for the blind or assisting with stability or seizure notification.
Right.
But no, I do not have anything to do with that. Animal-assisted therapy, animals that are approved for animal-assisted therapy are really totally different than service animals.
I see. Is there any particular kind of dog that is not good for this? I mean, like with a like a Jack Russell Terrier who tends to be very active and jumps around, and would that not be a good candidate for animal assisted therapy, or doesn't it make any difference?
It doesn't make any difference. What it really depends on is what you're looking for. So, for instance, that Jack Russell Terrier that's active and jumping may well be great to work with physical therapy for a child to have them throw the ball for the dog.
Oh, good.
Whereas where we might be concerned with a little bit too much energy for an elderly person, you want might want something that's a little bit more laid back, such as maybe an older dog or a Labrador Retriever or some other dog that's very quiet. It really is not breed specific. It's more of a function of what you're trying to do.
I see.
So it's important to try to relate what you're trying to accomplish with the animal and its handler that you want to come in to do the therapy. And again, that's one of the things that we talk about in our courses at animaledu.com. But the idea is that any breed of dog can be involved. It doesn't have to be a purebred. It can be a mixed breed of any size. For instance, some of the large breeds of dogs, if they're quiet, are very good with the elderly population that might be in wheelchairs, because they can sit next to the wheelchair and the person can still pat their head.
Right.
Or their neck. Whereas if you have a child on a bed or a person in a bed, and you might like the animal to get up on the bed with them,
which them.
Then maybe you would like a smaller dog, because it'll be easier, you know, and more room within the bed for a smaller dog to be able to lay next to the client.
One of the veterinarians at the hospital that I worked in the medical school, and I was so close with them. They're just wonderful. And she had a dog that did therapy training, but she said it flunked. Now, what would make an animal flunk?
Well, it's
a little beagle, too, and it was adorable. And I thought, how can this little animal be so adorable? But are there reasons that they don't pass the course, or they're not ready to pass the course?
Well, it depends on who is doing the evaluation. One of the most common groups, or I should say the most common group in the nation that does evaluations is the Delta Society. They have great information. It's at www.deltasociety.org. And they provide evaluators across the country, of which I am an evaluator, to evaluate teams. Basically, you're evaluating the person and the dog, or the animal, depending on the species, to make sure that they're appropriate for this type of setting. The idea is that you want the team to instill confidence. So if a dog tends to, even though it might talk, well, you know, people will say that, you know, when they sort of like growl but talk in a friendly way.
Yeah, yeah.
Some people might interpret that as growling, so that would not be appropriate. Even though it might not be, other people might interpret it that way. Or if they're afraid of crowds. There are many animals that are afraid of crowds, or they're afraid of equipment, such as wheelchairs or IV poles.
Right. Okay.
And if that's the case, then they wouldn't be able to pass. Again, in the situation, you need to have the animal be very obedient and listen so that no one gets hurt. And many times, probably the biggest problem that I see is that the dogs generally are not as obedient as they should be. They won't sit, or they won't come when called, or they don't heel well, which could cause a problem in a distracting environment.
Yeah. Is it because they're distracted, or is it because the dog just is not focused? He wasn't. It's a training issue.
It's usually a training issue.
I see.
Very honestly, very rarely is it a dog issue. It's almost always a training issue. And I tell the people, too, that, you know, it just sometimes I'll say you need, you know, if you work on obedience more, maybe in another 6 months or so, you'll be ready to try again. But right now, the animal's not ready. Another thing that we like to see in the dogs is that they're also willing to be around other dogs, not dog aggressive. Because oftentimes when you do animal-assisted therapy, you may be working with other people with other animals, and so your animal has to be willing to be around other animals and not be aggressive in any way. So some animals really do well throughout the test and obedience, but they're dog aggressive. And so we have to worry about that. So that would be another reason. But I'd say the most common reason for failing is, and I hate to use the word fail, it's just they need more work, but would be is obedience. But sometimes dogs just are too nervous. They're a little bit high strung or too nervous to be around groups of people, because one of the things the test tries to do is to simulate environments that they could run into in the therapeutic setting. such as a hospital or in a school where there might be a lot of children.
Mm-hmm.
And some animals just don't do well in when there's that much stimulation around.
I see. Where can we go for more information? Could you tell us your website again and what's available on it?
Sure. On our website, it's animaledu.com. We have information regarding just about how to get started in animal-assisted therapy. We have information on animal behavior and training, as well as then information about our courses that we provide in those areas that, as we talked earlier, can be taken as through one of our semesters, and our next semester begins in September, September 7th. Other areas that you can go for information, as I said earlier, was the Delta Society, which is www.deltasociety.org. They're an excellent source of information. Another good place of information, a good source, is dogwise.com. Not only do they have information, they also, you can purchase books through them also. Therapy Dogs, there's also an organization, which I don't have their website, but Therapy Dogs Incorporated, and another one, Therapy Dogs International, which also provide information. But if you're interested in taking courses, our website, www.animaledu.com, we provide online courses in animal-assisted therapy, the human-animal bond, and animal minds and emotions, as well as animal behavior and training.
Oh, I love it. I think this is one of the most wonderful breakthroughs in healing that I've ever heard. I think I first heard about hospice animals maybe 15 or 20 years ago, and I thought, oh, what a wonderful idea.
Yes.
And I'm so glad that people are appreciating the therapeutic value of animals and how much animals give to us of themselves.
Oh, yes.
To make this healing come about, they're so loving and wonderful, and they're so dedicated to what they do. And the animals that I talk to that work as therapy animals love their work. They're so happy to get up in the morning, and they know they're going to go and be at the hospital today. And how many days a week do they do this?
Well, you know, again, it depends on the dog. Some dogs can do it almost every day if they go with their handler and they're allowed time, you know, enough time to rest and breaks. Generally, though, most people who are involved will volunteer their time 1 or 2 hours a week. And, again, it depends on their dog as or their pet as to how well they handle it. But usually, like I said, most people volunteer 1 or 2 hours a week.
Okay. We're running out of time, so I want to thank you for being our guest tonight, Jan. It was absolutely a joy. And will you come back and talk with us again? You're so interesting.
Oh, I'd love to. Thank you very much for having me. It's been fun.
It's wonderful. We want to thank the listeners for listening in tonight. If there is a particular topic that you would like to hear about animals, please email me at talktopets@aol.com or visit my website at www.petstellthetruth.com. If you like tonight's show, you can contact the producers at www.bbsradio.com and let them know that you like this to hear more of this kind of programming. I thank you again, Jan, so much for being our guest, and you were just so informative.
Thank you very much, Agnes.
Okay, and this is Dr. Agnes Thomas, and for Jan, our guest, thank you again for listening, and good night.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning in to our radio program. And we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.